Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Tuesday on the Chuck Oliver Show, we're talking college football. Do it every day and have for almost 10 years, so thank y'all for that blessing. It's baseball season. We're talking college football. We got a Final Four set. It includes the SEC. Talking college football. Talked a little bit of college hoops, but we were at a major casino. We were at Harris in North Carolina, and so we had a wagering expert on, so we did talk a little of that. But it's college football, and it's always, all year, it's all college football. Full day on the Duncan Newsmaker line, folks. We just had Dave Bartu on. Fantastic. We're going to have some Vanderbilt talk coming up. Going to have at bottom of the hour, going to be fantastic today. We have Jim Nagy from the Reese's Senior Bowl, and I've got all kinds of questions about draft-eligible former SEC players, pass rushers, the wide receiver group, Brian Thomas, etc. Jim Nagy, Reese's Senior Bowl Executive Director. VandySports.com, Chris Lee, not Clark Lee. Chris Lee, if you saw the tweet today, you're having the Vanderbilt coach on? No, we're talking Vandy Sports, but not with the head coach, with Chris Lee from VandySports.com. So that's what we've got coming up. I say Duncan Newsmaker line. I want to give you like a – we have three guests most days. And I want to give you a recommendation. You go into a Duncan. All right, here's your three-pack. You get the sour cream donut, which is an indulgence until the double chocolate says, hold my 2% milk. It's a chocolate cake donut. And do you know what makes it a double chocolate donut? They put chocolate frosting then on it. It's silly. Then I think I take a step back at that point and I go with a basic glazed with just the maple frosting. So you can go a lot of different ways. Well, we're going to bring you three guests, and it's all the Dunkin' Newsmaker line. So that would be my suggestion if you make your way to a Dunkin' drive-thru today. And don't forget the 2%. So, again, we got Vanderbilt, and we got the Senior Bowl coming up. If we go back in time far enough, there was a concept that with literally nothing on the line, a network at the highest level chose with – its most valuable product, even though they didn't understand it at the time. If we go back to December of 1980, we didn't realize it until we could properly measure in a more accurate way TV ratings, radio ratings, etc. Folks, broadcast rights for play-by-play, for sports, for games, it's exploded for a reason. When we've gotten an accurate measurement on just how much we consume this as an American audience and global audience, okay, that's why rights have gone through the roof. Plus, no matter how much we pay, it still seems to be a lot more cheaper and more rewarding than scripted stuff. But NFL, it was as valuable in 1980 as it is now. It's not as popular, but it was as valuable in a relative way because there's like four places to watch TV. Two of them had the NFL. CBS, in large part, CBS had the NFC games. In large part, NBC had the NFC games. And then that all started changing when Fox said, hey, we have money. So then 89, 90, 91, whenever it changed. But for a couple of decades, that's kind of what it was. And ABC's like, we want to play. And they're like, all right, well, maybe you can have a Super Bowl, but you can have Monday Night Football. All right, that's a neat idea. And then ABC had actually the one game that was more valuable than like all the other games combined. But with the NFL as an incredibly valuable property, the last regular season game of the 1980 season, NBC, they had to televise it. NBC took a meaningless New York Jets at Miami Dolphins game. Both teams had been eliminated from the playoffs. It was the final game of the regular season. And the choice was made, the intent at NBC was, with nothing on the line and a game that just has no value, let's move it to Saturday and televise it with no announcers. It was done as an experiment. Now, like I said, folks, NBC, it's one of the like four places, if you're including PBS, that you could get television then. And they had the NFL, and they're like, yeah, we'll do this with one game. They didn't do it with another game after that. They had no announcers. We are in an era now where networks are not only attempting, they're adopting as policy approaches that have either never been used or used once or twice and were such failures that in this case, we have to go back 4.5 decades almost to find the one high-profile approach, no announcers. Point a camera at the field and let's go. I watched it that day. I think I was a sixth grader. And because I was an NFL fan, I was like, so on Saturday? And so I watched it. I remember thinking, I don't understand everything that's happening. Right after, you know, I would watch like the next day and say, oh, everything they say is so obvious. You realize there's no context. There's just green men running around on one side of the field and then white and green men on the other side of the field. So it was Dolphins and Jets, and I could tell who was who. I couldn't tell much more than that. One's green and orange, and one's green and white. And there's the score. Now, like maybe having the score on the screen most of the time. That was but they didn't do it again. As he said, this is now something that is coming. And if you want to say to boutique networks, and that's what it is. Like the Longhorn Network's a boutique network. And it doesn't have to be a bad thing. I would say the SEC network, that qualifies a boutique network. Anything that is specific for one, quote, niche, even though it's a big one, niche product. What do you broadcast all this? No, we just broadcast the SEC. Oh, so it's a niche product, yes. And we debuted the network in 2014? What was your debut? What was the footprint? Key West to Anchorage? Oh, really? Yeah, it was more of a nationwide rollout than a regional thing. But it's still a boutique thing because all you do is show this one thing. It's starting there. It ain't ending there because it's just starting there with announcerless games. Heath was talking about a Pac-12 baseball game. And by the way, the Pac-12, that's not a real conference at this point. And if you're talking about spring games, baseball, anything outside of Oregon State and Wazoo, like, I don't know why they had – big deal was made about they have a first female conference commissioner. That is so Bill Clinton – while legally accurate, it is misleading. But there's still a – that's a – people pay for it. If they charge and people pay, well, okay, it's viable. It's real. And they're broadcasting a game without announcers. When we're talking about something that is just not – it's a statistically insignificant spec on the broadcast landscape now, but still, it's an approach. How about we go a lot bigger? How about, and we say, well, it wasn't even on the right day. You know, NBC moved the NFL game to Saturday. Folks, this has already started happening, and it wasn't because of the pandemic. If we go way, way, way back, I want to say this was the first game of the 2016 college football season. There was a game on a Friday night. At least it was on a Friday night in the Eastern time zone. It was being played in Australia. I want to say it was it Rice and Cal Berkeley? And ESPN had announcers, but they explained, folks, it's just not realistic to send guys to Australia to do a football game. And I was like, well, it's expensive to do it, but unrealistic seems a stretch, but it is expensive to do it. So we're just going to have guys in the studio call the game based on what they see on the monitor. Okay. Now, a college football game that I'm pretty sure was in August on a Friday night between those two programs, it wasn't like it was the Orange Bowl. Okay? It wasn't like it was a semifinal game. But it still was a broadcast where I realized these guys, they ain't there. And when the pandemic came, and first there was there were no games. And then there was, and limit travel to anybody who's not playing or coaching. All right, broadcast, well, you stay and we'll send some camera guys and we'll put them in hazmat suits and masks and all that. And then the Michelin man can be behind the camera in center field at least 6 feet from the center fielder. But he'll be out there and that's how it is. I have some friends of mine. I tell you, something's kind of cool. Go back and look at the 2020 Major League postseason. I think that the number is like, I don't know, 40,000 or 60,000, whatever. Like 60,000 people saw a Major League game that year. I got a couple of buddies of mine that went out to Dallas and saw the games. But it was silliness what we were doing back then. We realize now that some of it was just kind of, you know, way left of, wow, I picked the direction, or right of, you know, an approach that we would do with more information. But it's one of those things that you started having networks because they were required to not have anyone on site or as few personnel as possible. Or what about the catcher and the batter and the umpire? Don't ask questions like that. That's what I was told, literally. We're all going to be 6 feet away. I was like, what about those three people? Well, don't ask those questions. Okay. So what was sort of out of, quote, necessity? It ain't out of necessity anymore, and there are still teams at the highest level. Who was it? Was it the Angels or the A's? Or there's a major league team that last year the announcers are like, what are we doing, folks? Why aren't we traveling? Well, to save money is why you don't travel. We have gotten to such a board of directors, investors need that last third of a percent. Like, and I get it. Commerce, capitalism works. Yeah. Sincerely, Gordon Gecko. We have gotten to such a slice it so thin, work out every last dollar of potential profit that it does affect the product. It really does. That regional sports network, folks, my hand of the Lord. I was sitting in a restaurant yesterday watching a regional sports network broadcast of a major league game. And I heard two employees there looking at the screen going, who is that? I don't know that person. Is that person new? And they started speculating about what happened to the previous person on the broadcast. And it was, oh, I bet that person got some opportunities nationwide. And no, that ain't what happened to the previous person. That ain't what happened to the previous. I swear to you. And I was sitting there going, keep your mouth shut, Chuck, because that ain't what happened to the previous person. It matters product-wise. When you have a pro and maybe you're paying six figures to and benefits and all that other stuff and you think, well, we can shave a lot of money. Yeah, you can shave a lot of money off that budget. What you're delivering is not the same. NBC tried it to try something, and they were like, this didn't work. Folks, it doesn't work better all these years later. Do you know what actually has seemed to work better? Investing more. I don't think Peyton and Eli work for free, do they? Like, I don't know, King's Hawaiian Rolls, whoever it is, comes on, the insurance company, that's extra. When you bring in Derek Mason and Matt Millen and Gene Chizik and Tom Herman to do the coaches thing with Reese Davis, when you bring them in, they all charge. And you know what that stuff is? Fantastic. I think it was Matt. I hope I don't give him wrong credit. He was. I think it was Matt Millen. He called that fake punt against Auburn in the Florida State. Now, I was looking at it going, don't let him fake. But he said, yeah, this would be a great time. And he called it. That coach's film room was great, and it cost. Networks are going the other way with this. And so we will get a lesser product. And it already is happening, by the way. We're already getting a lesser product, but they're trying to save a little money on the front end. All right, we're going to break, and we will continue rolling next.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. By way of clarification, I used to talk about Larry Fedora when he was the head coach at North Carolina. By the way, I'm very fond of Coach Fedora. I would say we're friendly. We're not friends. We don't go get wings together, but we're friendly. Big fan. Like his offense, too. I was like, he had the best job in America because he didn't have to win. Make some money, and you get access to good players, but you don't have to win. What I meant was you never really had to win big. You had to win enough and get them to November or maybe even December, and then hoop starts and just whatever. So you never had to win big. You had to win some. I wonder how much Clark Lee has to win, because he's got two conference wins in 3 years. And of the overall wins, the nine of them in 3 years, I don't know. It's Alabama A&M. It's Elon. It's two against Hawaii. Like, he has to win some. Not 10, but he's got to win something, I think. And they're investing. They're spending money now. I know a guy with the answers from BandySports.com. It's Chris Lee. Chris, welcome to the program. How are you?
Thanks. Just getting out of practice.
And tell me how they look heading into year four. They're about halfway through. This is practice 7 or 8. So what is the vibe right now going into year four? Because there hadn't been a whole lot of winning.
Well, look, the whole thing's a reset, and this sounds like excuse making, but let's just try this on for size and go where it goes. He took over a mess year one. Year two, they won a couple games late, Florida and Kentucky, that nobody expected them to win. I think that was a false signal that they were ahead of where they were. I think they thought A.J. Swan was the future of their football program. Both those turned out to be untrue. They got their hat handed to them a year ago. I think they went back and figured out, this thing we had with Mike Wright a couple of years ago wasn't always pretty, but it won us a couple of football games. I think that's the baseline for the reset this year. Now, of course, they had to reload with that in the portal, and at Vanderbilt, everything is tougher than the rest of the league. So it sets up for an interesting year. I don't know what the win total has to be at season's end, but it needs to look better, and at least they got a plan that's a lot different than the one they went into last year with.
And like everybody else, they worked the transfer portal. Talk about a kid coming in, the quarterback that some people, I guess, had seen at Utah is Nate Johnson is probably the favorite, but is that how it's actually playing out?
Well, the kid that I think is eventually going to be their starting quarterback is in Las Cruces right now, Diego Pavia, because he's finishing up school there, I guess, and then transferring in. So Nate Johnson has been battling out with the Berlewitz kid, who was the backup to Pavia last year in Mexico State, and Drew Dickey, who's a holdover, a little bit of a dual-threat guy from the last two teams. So they've been splitting reps in practice. I think Johnson's speed is just kind of giving him the edge at this moment, but the passing isn't always pretty. So I think that's going to be something to monitor.
So when you hire the OC, the old axiom is true, the quarterback who follows the OC has got the inside track.
You would think, and especially if he can throw the ball, which, again, it seems to be a little bit of a problem with the bunch they've got on campus right now.
What is the comment on Tim Beck? Because this is a guy that he comes in. I mean, he's been an OC at the D1 level at New Mexico State the past two seasons. He's worked at TCU, and before that's lower level. But what is the idea about Tim Beck coming in running this offense?
Well, the idea is it needs to look like it did a couple of years ago when they won, because Mike Wright was mobile and it could be 3rd and 8. You might not have anybody open. You might have everybody covered, and it breaks down because he had 10 600-meter speed and could scramble for a dozen yards. And again, I think it's that kind of mindset that has them where they are heading into this year. They've got a quarterback to be that they're bringing in that we mentioned with his coordinator and also his head coach, because don't forget Jerry Kill is on the staff. And the way I understand it, even though it's not that way in title, Jerry Kill is basically the head coach of the offense and Clark Lee is the coach of the defense, and I think that's where their head's going to be.
All right, just talk about mindset, because everything starts with transfers now with college football. And so if you've got the ability to get a kid in because maybe you evaluated better and you, quote, punch up in recruiting, well, now everybody looks around and go, hey, look at those Vanderbilt players.
Yeah.
Talk about the environment, because we see all the receivers leaving, you know, whatever, and that's been a couple of years. But they bring kids in as well. How able are they to punch up with name, image, likeness as well?
More able than I would have thought. Of course, that NIL depends on how much you buy into the head coach. I think Clark Lee's fortunate. He's a local kid. His dad is very well liked in the community, and I think there are people out there willing to give him money to try to make it work. I think they try to kind of tamp down public expectations of what their NIL is, but I've heard numbers that are real that are north of $10 million a year. Now, how much of that is what's actually fundraised and what's that sitting there. Hey, we got this star receiver in the portal we like, and we won't give you the money now, but we get that later is there. Hard to always say, and of course, NIL, there's always fact and fiction anyway. But everything I've heard, really since about the UNLV game last year, they realized that the thing that they had put together where they were going to try to money ball this through getting kids out of high school that were better than perceived that they could develop really wasn't the way that they could build this anymore. And so I think the portal at that point became a lot more of a reality. And once it became a way that they knew they needed to build, I think the numbers climbed pretty quickly.
Yeah, like I said, it just becomes tough. We talked about the Sean Elliott situation. He was like, we do a great job. We find a kid, and then we're just kind of a feeder school, and they get better on hard time. And then the bigger schools and the bigger programs actually come along. All right, so let's talk biggest picture possible, and that's facilities. And people, I was like, it's their money. They can do what they want with it. It's been a minute since the stadium has been upgraded. I've talked about the press box and the experience there a few times. They're spending now. They're like putting big dollars into the athletic facilities around campus. Just talk about, give us one facet that's immediately noticeable. We got about 60 seconds left.
Well, immediately noticeable is the fact you have to walk around like a mouse in a maze here because everything is off limits. Yeah, I mean, look, but it's starting to take shape. I think the building in the formerly open end zone is going to be finished for the fall. That's where their basketball practice facility is, and girders are going up on the other end. I think they should have done it faster, but look, if you had told me 6 years ago they're going to be doing any of this, I would have thought that hell had frozen over. So it is, you know, the speed is something I take some issue with, but it's certainly a lot different than any of us who've covered this for a while ever thought it was going to look. And I'm looking forward to seeing it done.
Yeah, I kidded with a buddy of mine actually last year in Nashville for Media Days. I was like, must be convenient because you're here. And he's like, does anything in Nashville look convenient right now? Like the whole city's under construction. So, brother, I appreciate you making some time coming on. Thank you so much.
Anytime. Thank you.
Good information there, man. VandySports.com, Chris Lee. Yeah, the whole city. Nashville's under construction. And it extends to Vanderbilt and even the football stadium and the other facilities as well. I can't swear to it, but I'm pretty certain maybe the last time in my life I see mustard yellow, deep shag, like 2-inch shag carpet, it was in the Vanderbilt athletic department. I was interviewing Bobby Johnson. I was like, what? Yeah. And I was like, don't even go there, because I remember that the carpet was the thing that set Tommy West off. And so that's what it is, man. It's always the carpet. Mark Stoops has talked about that. We need a new carpet. Everybody's like, we can't even get carpet in here. Well, they didn't have it for the longest time in Nashville.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at AtlantaRamjack.com.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Hour two. Tuesday, Chuck Oliver Show, talking college football, do it year-round, half for a decade, 9 states, 66, yay. Our next guest, he's got, I mean, a fistful of hardware. I'm talking Super Bowl rings with a Z, plural. And he also has a more impressive possession. I'm talking about a cachet of Reese's Pieces at any time. He is the director of the Reese's Senior Bowl down there in Mobile and a former NFL scout for a couple of decades. I want to welcome on Jim Nagy. Jim, welcome back, friend. How are you?
Doing great, Chuck.
Let's talk about the NFL draft and some guys that came through Mobile for the Senior Bowl, but then also just in general what the NFL is doing with that position. And I want to start with quarterbacks. What do you think they want to do with Jaden Daniels? Because I keep hearing that Jaden Daniels is sort of a unicorn prospect. But what is the Sunday vision for that guy?
Just let Jaden be Jaden. I don't think you want to put any constraints on the guy. You know, the one knock you hear, and this is the time of year where we're all trying to poke holes, right?
Yep.
You know, everyone's you know, referring to his weight and lack of bulk. Guy was 210 pounds at his pro day. I was in Baton Rouge last week talking to the strength coach there. I mean, he's been 212, 213. I mean, that's what Tom Brady played at the end of his career. So if that's the hole, that's a pretty small hole to be poking. He's just a different guy. You know, he threw it great last week. I thought he was the most improved quarterback in the 2022 season. And then you could make an argument he made a similar jump this past year. So, really, last 2 years of tape have been great. I was actually at a hotel in Baton Rouge the night before the pro day, and you had the Commanders general manager and head coach and the Patriots head coach and general manager down in the lobby having drinks. And he's probably going to be the quarterback for one of those two teams.
Do you believe there's an NFL front office sold on J.J. McCarthy in the top 10, the top 5? Like, what do you think is the feel about that kid? Because Mac Jones, I started hearing, he's a first rounder, and that's who the Niners traded to 3 to get. And I was like, that seems rich, and I'll be darned, he went the first round 15. So whether it turns out right or not, what do you think the feel is on J.J. McCarthy?
Yeah, you get in that top 5, top 10 area. I don't know, Chuck. Teams do like him now. I'll share another story from that LSU pro day. I was watching it with the general manager from a team who had been to Caleb Williams pro day at USC and JJ's at Michigan. And then the next day, following day from after LSU, was North Carolina for Drake May and Washington's for Michael Penix. So he hasn't seen those yet. But I asked him to rank those three guys pro days, and he said J.J. McCarthy 1, Jaden Daniels 2, Caleb Williams 3. And again, that's just a pro day. But what pro day show are physical tools. You know, they're a showcase for physical tools. So J.J. has that kind of talent. The guy's lost 3 games going in his entire high school and college career. 3 games. That's all he's lost. So, again, it's easy to make the arguments too. This guy would be fun draft room debate, because you're going to have guys, you know, saying what he was surrounded by at Michigan, and they ran the ball and they were ball control and they didn't put a lot on J.J. But then you look at the physical potential of the kid, and you could justify a high first round pick. So he's probably, to me, the most interesting player in this draft and where he ends up.
Continuing, the executive director, Reese's Senior Bowl. Somehow their peanut butter just tastes better, man. They do it better. It's good stuff. And he's always got it. Let's continue and talk NFL draft here. And let's go out to wide receiver, Brian Thomas. He could be the 4th receiver. I don't know, 5th receiver. Eye of the beholder when you get out of the top 5, 6, 7, whatever. What do you see for him as an NFL receiver? Because he's not a consolation prize just because Marvin Harrison and Rome Odunze are great.
No, he's not. You know, and again, if he weren't on the same team as Malik Nabers, you know, he would probably have more of a spotlight on him. Going back to August, was at LSU, and the staff was really talking this guy up, and he hadn't really broke out yet. They kind of predicted the breakout. You're talking about a 6'3", really smooth, loose, athletic guy that can run routes. He can get deep, and he does have nice hands. There was a couple catches, fingertip catches on deep balls that he ran under in that pro day that were super impressive. So I would think probably somewhere in the 20s. I don't think he's going to get out of that. But I do think you have a guy, you know, high-end and true number one receiver in the league. You know, if he doesn't hit that ceiling, you still got a number two starting receiver.
Jalen Polk as well. I've talked about him. I was like, well, he played opposite Rome. So, you know, because he's got good speed, not great. He's got good size, not great speed. I'm like, well, against Rome, I mean, everybody kind of looks second place. But tell me about just Jalen Polk on his own.
Yeah, and they had Jalen McMillan there too.
Yep.
UW's 3 receiver set was probably the best in the country this year. I'll say this. Polk had an unbelievable combine workout. That's the only time I've ever seen that kid live. I've never seen – UW in a game. It's kind of hard, right, Chuck? Getting from Mobile to Seattle, that's not an easy flight. I used to have to do it when I was working for the Seahawks. It's not a fun flight. But teams are really high on Jalen Polk. It's funny you bring him up. I mean, there's always a handful of players in every draft class that, you know, you feel like the league is higher on than the media, and then maybe the media is maybe higher on than the league. I think the league likes Jalen Polk more than you're seeing him in the media right now. Again, I think he's going to be a starting receiver, just tough, dependable, really good hands, and a guy that for a junior player, a lot of those guys coming out, you know, they're a little raw, they need refinement. Most teams think Jalen Polk's ready to go.
So there is this, like, we seem to think we understand how important a 40 is as a fan or somebody in the media even, and height and weight, all these things we understand. What about the ability to get open? Because, like, somebody asked me, what's Justin Jefferson? Why is he so great? I was like, he gets open. Talk Brock Bowers and the ability to get open, because he is not Kyle Pitts size and weight, and he doesn't, you know, just melt your face mask in the 40. I think he gets open, though. Like, what is that quantitative ability that, like, an NFL scout looks at him? What do you think about Brock Bowers?
Yeah, I think the get open ability is huge, that you touch on that. And there's different ways, right? You can separate vertically, get open vertically with speed. You can get open off the line with speed, and then there's separation quickness at the top of the route. And then there's just savvy in know-how and being able to adjust on the run, you know, read coverages, sit down against zone. And I think that's what Brock does really, really well. Just a really natural football player. Usually football players figure out a way to get open. And that's what Travis Kelce's done. You know, Travis Kelce wasn't a wow you guy at the combine coming out of Cincinnati, he wouldn't have lasted to the third round, you know, but it's hard to quantify, you know. But the more you watch a player and the more he just gets open, you're like, okay, we got to give it to this guy. He just understands how to get open. You know, as a scout, you always refer to those guys as QB friendly players, whether it's at a, you know, tight end or wide receiver. And that's the one thing we don't talk about Brock being is he's so quarterback friendly. I think you talk to those quarterbacks at Georgia, they tell you that, but he's got that quality for sure.
Yeah, there's one play that stood out to me, and I was at the game, and he's split out, and he gives a movement with his outside shoulder, and he gets the defensive back to take an outside drop step, and I was like, it's over. Because then he just cuts right back down the seam, and when I was like, he's too good for that. It's over. It's done. It was a big game. There's that ability that you don't measure with a stopwatch or anything else. All right, flip it around. What separates Dallas Turner and Jared Verse?
Ooh, that's a good one. Jared Verse, probably more powerful. Dallas Turner, more athletic of the two guys. They'll both go. That's going to be the great thing in this draft. You're going to have all these quarterbacks. There's going to be a run on these quarterbacks, a run on these wideouts, a run on these offensive tackles. And then you're going to have pass rushers like Dallas Turner, Jared Verse, and I would throw Leatu Latu from UCLA in that conversation. I think they're probably the clear top three guys. And they're all different. They're all different players. So whoever needs pass rush help, and I would think up there in your neck of the woods, the Atlanta Falcons are probably zeroing in on these guys with Raheem Morris being a defensive head coach. You're going to have a really good pass rusher fall in your lap. But between those two guys, Verse has more pop. And Dallas Turner is he's a crazy athlete.
All right. Do you and I live in a world where the number one left tackle, the number one pass protector in the draft is there at like 6 or 7 or 8?
Yeah, we could, certainly. You know, if someone trades up for JJ and then you get Marvin Harrison, if he goes somewhere and the Chargers take Roma Dunsey to pair him with Justin Herbert, yeah, then you're getting into that 6, 7, 8 range. And again, there's debate who the best pass protector is. It's such a deep tackle class, right? It's going to be really – I mean, to me, the intriguing guys are McCarthy, where does he go? And who's going to be the first offensive lineman? Who's going to be the first pass rusher? There's groupings of positions where there's not a clear-cut guy this year. So it's going to be a fun draft. It's going to be a fun top half of the first round draft.
Is it me being – by the way, I just caught myself calling him John Alt's kid. He's his own human now. Is it being provocative or trying to outsmart things to say Byron Murphy might be the best defensive lineman? He's not the most valuable because he's not going to hit a quarterback as much as Verse, for instance. But talk about Murphy, because he could be the first defensive player off the board maybe.
Yeah, you're breaking my heart, Chuck. You're bringing up a sore subject. We had Byron committed to playing the Senior Bowl, and then Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network. I love DJ, old scouting friend of mine. Well, he puts out a mock draft, and he puts Byron Murphy at like 12. And I texted Daniel. I said, "You just got this kid out of the Senior Bowl," and he's like, "No, don't say that." Literally an hour later, the agent calls and said, "I can't send him to the Senior Bowl anymore if he's going to go that high." So to answer your question, yeah. Byron Murphy is a really fun player to watch. You could easily make a case he's the best defensive lineman in the draft. He doesn't have all the measurable stuff. He's undersized, but he's really quick. He's really powerful. My comparison for the guy is Grady Jarrett. And Grady's one of my favorite players I've scouted in the last 15 years. I loved Grady Jarrett coming out of Clemson. Got way underdrafted because everyone just looked at the size. They didn't really watch the player. Byron Murphy, the same guy. I mean, short, powerful, quick, super productive. So really, really good football player. He's one of those guys. He'll step on a field for whoever drafts him next year and be an impact player.
Yeah, providing good vittles during the week works for the media. Not so much for a guy who thinks he's going to be a top 10 pick. He can probably take care of his own meals. Jim, I appreciate you coming on today, friend. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Chuck.
Jim Nagy, Executive Director, Reese's Senior Bowl down in Mobile. Good eating down there in Mobile. I've told you, Felix is top of the line, man. If you get down there, fantastic. And just original Mardi Gras. And it's just all kinds of great history. I love Mobile. So Jim Nagy down there on the campus of USA and their shiny new crib. And it's a smaller but NFL facility. It's like what we talked about, the arena at Auburn. It's an NBA facility. It's smaller, but it's an NBA level. That's the same sort of thing. This is, you have every NFL team, like entire staffs down there looking around going, all right, doesn't seat 73, but this is an NFL level facility. And after the, Heath, do you ever go to Ladd Peebles? Ever spend time there?
I never had the pleasure.
You're okay. Well, it's got history.
I've heard it's got a robust history.
Been there a long, long time. And
Neighborhood Watch program, pretty active.
I was part of that history on some times. Is that about the most arm's length sort of, it's got history and some of it included me. So there you go. I even went to the bowl games there and high school football and everything else. So appreciate Jim coming on, and we will take a break and wrap up next.
College football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Yeah, I've had some good ones. You know, I was Dante Moncrief to Mike Wallace, then to Laquan Treadwell, and then Quincy Adeboy, Joe Evan, even DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, Van Jefferson, and boy, I'm every bit as excited about him as I was those.
Well, that's Hugh Freeze, and he's talking about NFL first-round draft picks. He's talking about all pros, pro bowlers, $100 million contract guys. He's not talking about, like, all SEC players, which is the important thing to Auburn fans. Hugh Freeze is talking about former stud wide receivers that he has coached and how they make him think of Cam Coleman. Now, he's not the only five-star freshman receiver at Auburn. And they have, actually, they're all even on their stud freshman receivers, plural, a lot of them, not even on campus yet. So that's a developing thing. And Auburn fans can't wait for it to develop. Anthony Schwartz had a minute in the NFL. He could run fast in a straight line. And occasionally Gus would make that straight line be from like one slot to the other side of the field and hand him the football. Anthony Schwartz was a pretty limited receiver. Imagine how fast you have to be to get drafted like that. If you don't, well, he was an NFL guy though. And Seth Williams was a pro football receiver guy, NFL and Canada. He might still be in Canada. I think Duke Williams is in Canada. Nick Marshall is in Canada playing corner, I think. So I looked, did I mention this last week? Justin Hardy, the former East Carolina receiver. He got about 5 years in the NFL. The reason I brought this up, folks, it's the whole thing about Canadian League. It has nothing to do with Auburn's wide receivers. Justin Hardy played 5 years in the NFL for a few teams. Game checks were $4 million. And so that's not bad. I mean, he's 27 years old, and he is NFL career is done, but he made $4 million. Plus whatever endorsement or additional information. So he, like, you're in a good spot. It's not, I can sit back and just go to the mailbox and, you know, every 15 days, but it's decent. Well, he's like, I want to keep playing football. So he went to Canada. The reason I was looking at him is Justin Hardy, five-year NFL vet, good enough player. He had a breakout season last year, like 100 catches and 1,500 yards and a bunch of touchdowns and whatever. And he got rewarded with a one-year contract from the team that he did all that for. He tweeted out, happy to announce I've signed another one-year contract. Rent's due. So it's not quite NFL money up in Canada. So there's a big difference when I say, yeah, he's been an NFL receiver and a Canadian League receiver. If Justin Hardy's saying rent's due and I just went for $1,500, okay, it just kind of puts into perspective there. But if you've got NFL guys coming in that as they're college freshmen, no, he's a high school senior. Like there's prom coming up. Prom may be this weekend for all we know. He's still got graduation coming up. And so all of this against the backdrop of, and he's going to revamp the entire Auburn wide receiver core. Well, him and a few partners, maybe they'll do that. That's brought to you by thisstuffmatters.net, and that's what matters to me today. Heath, how's your Tuesday?
So I'm looking at some numbers, Chuck, and we know what's going on. And look, I know there's people right now listening to us in their car that are saying, when they talk about college athletics, they're frustrated. They're frustrated about what we're about to have in 2 weeks with this orgy of NIL
That's
money
happening.
And the way it's going to change the sport. You got some people that are really, really unhappy about it. I understand where they're coming from. How this stuff is happening is not necessarily the way any of us would have drawn it up if we could. It is important to remember the reason it is happening is because the NCAA did something that has been expressly declared by a whole bunch of different judges at this point, including a Supreme Court justice, to be wildly illegal for years. So it's one thing to say, well, I just liked it better the other way. The problem is, it's like, well, that was illegal. So there's a lot of things we might like better the other way, but they're illegal. They keep going, though, of course, to Congress. Emmert did it. Now Baker's doing it. Going to Congress saying, help us out. Solve our problems. And they have perpetually, as they have done that, tried to portray what's happening as the apocalypse.
Oh, they've been treated like a speed bag.
It's going to kill college sports, Chuck. It's going to be the end of everything if players are doing endorsements. It's going to ruin everything. Well, the problem here is the numbers are in from this weekend in the NCAA basketball tournament, and they are screaming at an incredibly loud volume, wrong, incredibly incorrect. NC State and Duke. So you're talking about two teams from one state, one team with a national
regional
fan base, but still, two teams in one state, one TV market, Chuck.
Yep.
Not even Charlotte and Raleigh.
Raleigh.
No, one TV market. 15.1 million viewers.
Believe every bit of it. I could name two players on NC State before tip-off.
And if you're saying, well, come on, everybody hates Duke. That's all that is. Everybody hates Duke, and that's what that was. Tennessee and Purdue, 10.4 million viewers. 10.4. And, oh, yes, Colorado and Iowa, where right in the middle of the game you're seeing Caitlin Clark in every break do an insurance commercial or something, 6.9 million viewers for women's basketball.
That they paid nothing for.
In the Sweet 16.
They paid nothing for that.
I mean, think about that. The women's tournament was a throw-in for years for ESPN. Total, just say, hey, somebody's got to air it. You might as well do it. Total throw-in. Now you have someone who is a star, who is doing endorsements, who is doing that thing that people... If the public sees these people as being professional in any way, they will not watch. They will not follow. They literally went to the Supreme Court and said, the whole appeal of college sports is that these people are not paid. That is why they watch. It is not loyalty to the schools. It is certainly not any interest in particular players. They have no value beyond their status as a player for school X. None of that, if you take that away, nothing else will appeal. And instead, the women's tournament is exploding in their numbers, not just for that game, but for other games too, as other stars emerge on the scene. I mean, my goodness, Chuck, what if they get South Carolina, an undefeated South Carolina, in a rematch with Caitlin Clark for the national championship in the women's tournament, they're going to break $12 million for the women's championship. Probably more than that. I mean, this is their problem. There are some things Congress could do to help them, but when you sound the alarm bell over and over and over, and what you claim turns out to be fake, no one's going to listen to you anymore.
Yeah, when you look at Congress and go, yo, I ain't got the money, and then regular confirmation that it's raining in college athletics. Hard to pull that off. David on the ones and twos, spinning gold. Heath, doing a great job, rolling next to the stars. I'm along for the ride as well. 22 hours from now, we'll all be back, recharge batteries, talking a little college football right here on Chuck Oliver Show.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.